The University Tower chimes ring in another session of Ask the Professor, the show in which you match wits with the University of Detroit Mercy professors in an unrehearsed session of questions and answers. I'm your host, Matt Mayo, and let me introduce to you our panel for today. All the way at the bottom, Jim Tubbs. It's good to see you, Jim.
Hello.
What's shaking, Jim?
Things are going well here at the bottom.
You always look so stately in that chair. You always look totally relaxed.
I'm comfortable in this chair.
I'll Photoshop the crown in again if you want, Jim.
I know it really is. It's quite a stately chair. It's almost a throne. It really is. Everything going well though, Jim?
So far, so good. Yep. I'm glad that it's finally going to actually be warm.
Right.
Hank, we have had extended chilly weather here until like today, but it's going to be in the 70s over the weekend, I think.
That's right. We did have 3 inches of snow on Tuesday.
Yes, we did.
Sissy stuff.
Yeah. There were a lot of people in my department walking around with sour faces muttering, "This is just not necessary. Not even necessary.
It's just wrong.
Serves no purpose." Professor Mara Livesey is here with us today. How's it going, Mara?
Oh, it's going.
Do you have lecture on Monday?
I don't teach on Mondays.
Oh, there
we go. So I am done. I've been done since yesterday.
That's very, very nice. But you have a final to give, I think.
I absolutely do on Thursday.
Okay. You got a few days to get ready. That's cool. Very, absolutely. Very cool. And what are those students in for? Can you tell us what number 12 is?
It's going to be a real doozy. They might cry.
Oh, okay. That would just be normal for education during the pandemic.
Yeah.
Oh, my gosh. Give us your wildest, like, dead week story from this last week. Did anything wild and crazy happen in your lecture lab?
Okay. So I'm going to have to show all these to the department, but for their final project, the students in my lab made TikToks. Ooh. And you know this, Matt, but no one else here does. Earlier this semester, the professor accidentally dropped and broke a bottle of like really bad smelling stuff. Every single one of their TikToks referenced that. So I felt great.
Legendary is what we call you. Legendary. That's awesome. Professor Heather Hill is here with us. Heather, can I say, are like all the searches done? Are you done?
Yeah. Well, wow. I'm done.
Congratulations.
Yeah. And done with. So
it was a rough year for all the things we had to find replacements for.
Well, you too, you know.
Everybody. No. How about your department?
We're done. Done.
Congratulations.
Two great new hires. Yeah.
What are, I cannot ask you the names. What are the specialties for your new hires?
Transatlantic modernisms. Ooh. And so a modernist and a new writing program director.
Oh, nice. Very good. That's great to hear.
Yeah.
Very,
we had lots of camp. We had over, at least for the literature position, we had, I think, close like 107 applicants.
Incredible. That's wonderful.
Just for one of the positions.
That's really great.
Well, excellent. It says something about the state of the job market, you know.
Yeah, it does.
Yeah, it does. But, well, thanks for your service, because it takes a lot of effort to get those things right.
Well, part of the dean's search process was aided by wonderful Hank. So you can introduce him now.
There you go. It makes perfect sense. Hank was just inquiring whether his service helping out with these searches granted him tenure as some part of the process. And we can give you all sorts of things, Jolly Ranchers, tenure, whatever it takes. Thanks for your service too, Hank.
You're welcome. Is there a pension involved?
What would you say to a cold cup of coffee and a coupon that expired from McDonald's hash browns? Is that enough?
Sounds like home.
Isn't that the last page of the union contract?
Some grits and liver mush, Hank.
Professor Stephen Manning.
He qualifies for VESIP, doesn't he?
Oh, well, now we're talking. That's a lump sum payout right there. Yeah, absolutely. Stephen, how's it going for you?
Fine, just fine.
Excellent. Yeah. Excellent. And you're in the library today?
Me?
You have books behind you, so you know, it looks like you're in the library.
Living room, but there are books everywhere. There are books in most of the rooms of the house. You know,
that is the bookish life of an academic.
Then I'm now, it's actually the life of a retired person, because now I have time to actually read some of these books. So,
and they're great ideas.
Yeah.
Awesome.
Nice. I mean, not for teaching purposes.
Right.
Finally.
For pleasure.
For pleasure. Yeah.
Professor Dave Chow, what was the last book you read / illustrated?
Oh, I know. I was telling Hank earlier. Oceanic Arts, you know, the auction catalog that's going down tomorrow.
Really?
I've been studying that thing 24/7 for the last week and a half.
You are a tiki master, aren't you?
No, I'm gonna be a broke tiki master after Sunday. So.
Oh, because you're gonna buy stuff.
I'm going to try. I've been informed that I might be bidding against the head of Pixar come tomorrow. So he's got several more zeros in front of his decimal point than I do. So
you're going to get accoutrement for your tiki bar?
I'm going to try.
That's pretty awesome.
There's over 2,000 items, but the odds of me getting one are, we'll see.
It's online, obviously, right?
Yes. I wish I was in Whittier live, but I'll do it from here.
That's pretty cool. Those auction books are just absolutely incredible. I mean, that's probably printed on glossy paper.
Uh-huh.
Weighs a ton.
As you could tell, there's also enough post-it notes all over the edges, so it's twice as thick. So I'm ready. I'm financially solvent after tax season. So
in our department, we're very used to seeing those passed around with coins in them, because Mark Benvenuto is really big into bidding on coins at those shows. So we're glad to have you here, Dave. And again, thank you so much for joining us, guest panelist Hank Durkin, friend of the College of Liberal Arts and Education, friend of Ask the Professor. We're very glad that you're here.
Thank you. It's a pleasure to be here. It's something I truly enjoy.
Excellent. Hey, folks, this is a program. You can send us questions regarding anything. If you stump the panel, you win a prize. If you don't stump the panel, you win a prize. You can send us the questions in a number of ways. You can email us at atp@udmerced.edu. Find us on Facebook and Instagram, or listen on your favorite smart speaker by asking it to play Ask the Professor at University of Detroit Mercy. Here we go. Just a quick note from a listener. It's kind of cool. Professors, my name is Steve Barney, and I've been a fan of the show for many years. I used to listen to the show with my dad many, many decades ago. I just recently found your show again online, and I enjoy it very much. I have a question that I hope you can help me with. I once sent in a set of questions and actually stumped the panel and received the famous winner's package. My question is there any way I can find the show I was on in your archives? It would have been sometime in the early 1980s. I would love to hear the questions I asked again. Any help you can give would be greatly appreciated. Steve Barney, and he says, thanks for the memories and the laughs. We'll get our crack team of researchers on that, Steve. Thanks for listening. That's awesome. Okay, professors, with a new justice on the Supreme Court, here are some questions about the body of the Supreme Court.
Oh,
I thought you were going to end at body.
Oh, I was going to say, like, anatomy. Okay. Anatomy. Oh,
yikes. No, we'll talk about the Supreme Court today.
These questions are from Ben Foudy of Norfolk, Virginia.
Aside from judge, what are the two most common jobs? For the record, it's a tie. For a Chief Justice of the U.S. Supreme Court to have previously held?
Lawyer.
You know?
What, like an appellate court?
Like prosecutor? Or?
I think that we're more specific than lawyer, because I got to give partial credit to Heather. A lot of them are lawyers, but these are very specific titles that, for the record, three previous Chief Justices have held.
It's not public defender.
Not prosecutor, because she was controversial because of that.
No.
Appellate court judges?
No, it's actually even more laser focused than that, Jim. These are cabinet positions.
Attorney General?
Attorney General is a really good guess, but it's not one of them, Hank.
Justice Department?
No.
Former President of the United States.
That's a good guess too, but unfortunately that doesn't rank as three.
That's only one.
Yeah.
Only one.
Yep. Secretary of the Treasury, Secretary of State. There have been three each.
Okay. Oh, wow. Yep.
Okay. Pretty interesting. Of course, I always have to bring up one of my favorite wacky historical figures. One of those secretaries of the Treasury was none other than Salmon P. Chase, the man who decided to put his own face on the $10,000 bill. I love that story.
I'll check my wallet. I'll make sure his photo is still there.
Who was the Republican nominee for president in 1916?
1916?
Mm-hmm. Same, a similar name to the husband of one of our longtime panelists who hasn't been around in a long time. That was a really bad clue.
Charles
Evans Hughes.
Yes, Charles Evan Hughes. That's right. Yes, there you go.
Kendra, we miss you. Forgive us.
I know. How about Republican nominee for VP 1948, initials EW?
EW.
This is actually one of the more famous chief justices.
Earl Warren.
Earl Warren is what we're talking about. There we go.
Didn't know he was on a presidential. He was governor of California before he became.
There we go.
Yeah, I was going to say, like, who was he running with?
Tom Dewey.
48, Dewey, yeah.
Dewey, yeah.
Remember,
yeah.
Dewey beat Truman that year.
Yes. Mm-hmm. Love the newspaper headlines. So accurate.
That's right. Oh, my gosh.
They had a 50-50 chance.
Yeah, that's true.
Better than Gore.
Who was the last Chief Justice who held elective office? And I believe they're referring to the reference that Jim just made. So you know what? How about I just give you that one? It was Earl Warren from 1953 to 1969.
He was governor of California.
State of California, yeah. Okay. How many of the 17 total chief justices so far died in office?
Ooh, that's kind of grisly.
So what percent, I mean percentage, what number of 17?
Five.
It's higher.
Oh. Six.
Seven.
It was nine. It was 53% have died in office. Marshall, Taney, Chase, Waite, Fuller, White, Stone, Vinson, and of course, Rehnquist. Yes, so they all passed away while they were in office.
Dedicated lot.
Yes, yes. Dying with your boots on, as the army folks say.
Or with a robe on.
Or with a robe on, with a gavel in hand. Most federal impeachment trials occur in the Senate, would be presided over by the vice president. Only the president's impeachment trial is specifically presided over by the chief justice to protect the Constitution. That means had a vice president been impeached, he or she would have presided over their own trial. What year did the Senate change the rules so the VP impeachment would be presided over as well by the chief justice?
Was it an Agnew thing? Was it
this? Yeah, 74, 73.
Yeah.
So for the record, you basically have the spirit of the response. Because of Spiro Agnew, who very much was in danger of being in charge of his own impeachment trial, we got around to it and changed the law in 1999.
Oh, geez.
The wheels of justice turn slowly.
Just a little.
It's just, it was on a post-it note on someone's monitor. It fell off, you know, it went under the desk.
It didn't get printed up at Kinko's that night. That's all, you know.
I mean, we love the framers to death for the creativity of our founding documents, but a few things were still kind of better in practice, a little bit different. Two presidents, great piece of trivia. Throw this up on Jeopardy anytime soon. Two presidents never appointed a single Supreme Court justice. Who were they? Wow. One obvious, one not.
Jimmy Carter was one of them.
Yep, Jimmy Carter. And the other one?
Oh, Ford. No.
Joe Biden.
Oh, William Henry Harrison.
It was Harrison. Harrison was only in office for 30 days.
He died in a month.
But I don't know if I would have gotten Carter, Jim. I don't know if that would have like jumped out at me. That's kind of cool. Malaise forever. Which president appointed the most Supreme Court justices? 11.
Must have been a two-termer.
George Washington.
It was Washington. Yeah, it was Washington.
Nice.
Washington, obviously.
First, you got to boot up the courts.
Yeah, he had the starter kit. So, I mean, why not?
You know, why did he get so many? Oh, yeah.
Oh, yeah.
So here is a nice little piece of trickery, sort of thing we would throw on a final exam. According to the U.S. Constitution, how was the Chief Justice selected?
Arm wrestling. Tug of war?
Well, the Chief Justice is appointed by the president, yeah, like all the others, aren't they?
There's an opening.
So you know what it says here is that the Constitution is silent on the process. Huh. The president, quote, shall have the power, by and with the advice and consent of the Senate, and shall appoint judges and officers of the Supreme Court. Article 1 mentions there is a Chief Justice who presides over presidential impeachment, but it doesn't say how that office would be selected. So it exists, but yeah, very interesting.
I had always wondered, like, how did Roberts become the Chief Justice? I mean, he wasn't the senior person on the...
No, you're nominated for that specific role.
Mm.
Okay.
Yeah. Yeah. And I'm sure Scalia wanted it desperately.
Oh,
but
yeah. I think that's the way it works, right, Hank? Like when your chief is stepping down or passes, then when the next person comes in, that's their expected role, right?
No, not necessarily, because you could elevate a justice to the chief, but somebody has to be nominated for that specific role.
Got it. Got it.
You're listening to Ask the Professor from University of Detroit Mercy. We're grateful for those listeners who have sent questions for today's show. And we invite you to email your questions to atp@udmercy.edu. The professors will return to answer more questions in just 60 seconds. But first, we invite you to enjoy these Ask the Professor memories from 1995. It's an Ask the Professor flashback.
Who said only in a police state is the job of a policeman easy?
Gore Vidal.
No. No, it's an American actor, director, filmmaker, stage director, theater.
Orson Welles.
That's right. All right. Orson Welles. That's right. Who said moral indignation, jealousy with a halo? Ooh,
no. That's nice.
Oh, Sarah.
Is that Amber White?
No. And just joining us from the Department of History, the chairman of that department, Professor Sarah Gravel.
Someone sitting in my chair. I'm in my forage boat.
Oh, don't relax. What about your bed?
Nobody's sleeping in my bed.
Okay.
Oh, you poor love.
These questions are from Ben Foudy of Norfolk, Virginia. How many of the 115 justices, including Judge Brown Jackson, how many of the 115 total justices of the Supreme Court had a degree in law? What a great question.
90.
Most?
Yeah, all of them, hopefully.
I'd say 80.
You know what it says here? Only 50, 43%
wow.
The justices of the Supreme Court have degrees in law.
Wait, I thought you had to.
Yeah.
No.
But remember, back in the earlier days of the Republic, you could become a lawyer by studying law with a lawyer.
That's true.
So they wouldn't have a piece of paper.
Yeah.
Yep. And this makes sense because once we see the data in a different light, it makes a lot more sense.
Yep.
Professors, who was the last justice who didn't have a JD? You can either say the name or maybe the era they're from.
I don't think Earl Warren had a JD degree, did he?
But Earl would have been before this person, so maybe that's possible.
Oh, okay.
It says Lewis Powell, who was 72 to 87, just had an LLM from Harvard. So the idea is pretty much everything in the modern era, they've had law degrees. But back in the day, someone just liked you a lot, and hey, what do you think?
Hey, you look good in a robe, you know?
What's an LLM?
That's a good question, too.
Master of Laws. That was before the JD.
Before the JD. There you go. Who was the last, when did the last justice who had no formal legal education at all serve? So we're looking for a window of years.
Ooh.
FYI, to help you out, he left school at age 14 to work in a law office and become a stenographer. He left the court to become the first director of the Office of Economic Stabilization. He was succeeded in that directorship by future Chief Justice Fred Vinson. What years are we talking?
Vinson was FDR, wasn't he?
You pretty much hit it spot on. So it would have been the early 40s.
Yeah, 38, 40, thereabouts.
James Burns was his name.
Jimmy Burns from South Carolina.
There you go.
Montgomery's a little brother, right?
No.
What are the top three law schools for a Supreme Court justice to have graduated from?
Harvard.
Yale, Stanford.
Harvard, Yale.
Columbia.
There we go. For, are you ready? 22 alums, 11 alums, 7 alums, Not everybody, for the record, had the higher degree, but they at least had a bachelor's from those institutions. So.
Wasn't when there were two justices on the Supreme Court from Reagan's time, both of them came from Stanford, and they were the first Stanford ones on the court, I thought.
Really? The 80s, huh?
Hmm.
Oh, like an, you say Stanford.
Wasn't Sandra Day O'Connor one of them?
Yeah, she was one of them. Who was her close buddy who was on the court?
Oh, gosh.
Oh. I thought they were the first Stanford degrees.
I'm blinded, Hank, because you're wearing this red polo, and I'm picturing the dancing tree.
Stanford Cardinal.
The Cardinal, yeah, the dancing tree. Oh, look at that. Detroit Mercy.
Put it on special for this.
Oh, that's awesome. That's awesome. We'll get our crack team of researchers on that one, too. It's been well noted that Amy Barrett is the first justice in a while who didn't graduate from one of the big three law schools. Who was the last serving justice to have not graduated, besides her, from one of the big three? This is a good piece of trivia, too.
Hmm.
I'll probably give it away by giving you the person's initials, J.P.S.
John Paul Stevens?
John Paul Stevens graduated from good old Big Ten Northwestern. Way to go. Way to go.
Oh, okay. I was waiting for like OCC or something like that. That's all.
Oh, stop. Oh, my gosh. I love how you all, what did you say? You said Harvard, Yale, and then you said something else on the East Coast. I'm like, no, another East. Just keep saying Columbia. Schools out East. The first justice to have graduated from law school was Levi Woodbury. When was he appointed? Whew.
1825.
I'm just giving it to you, Jim. 1845. Fun fact, he was also Secretary of the Treasury, and the law school he went to no longer exists.
It was a correspondence school. Oh.
There are a lot of schools that no longer exist.
Yeah, this is a very true thing, especially after our dear pandemic here. Litchfield Law School was the name of the school that no longer exists that Levi attended.
Was it in Litchfield, Connecticut?
You know, it doesn't say. It's tied with what other famous school for the fourth greatest number of alums on the Supreme Court with three each?
Yale?
Georgetown.
No, we're going Big Ten again.
Michigan?
That's the University of Michigan. Yes, that's right.
I wonder if was Litchfield absorbed and became a law school for some university?
Something like that. It reminded me, Hank, a little bit of how Detroit College of Law was kind of gobbled by Michigan State, things like that, you know. How many justices came from the great state of Michigan?
10.
7.
3.
5.
2?
We're at 2 is where we are. Do you remember who they are? One of them is a name that is up on the Hall of Justice downtown.
Frank Murphy.
Frank Murphy. He was, for the record, the 35th governor of the great state of Michigan. And another lesser known one, but very, very cool historical background, Henry Billings Brown, late 1890s, was actually the majority author of Plessy versus Ferguson. So that is a good history. And let me tell you, Ben from Norfolk, Virginia, we really, really appreciate your questions. I'm so sorry that I got ahead of myself and just started reading because those were fantastic. And we are very pleased to see Judge Brown on the court and to see what it can do next.
Yeah. Thanks, Ben.
Send more.
Hey, you know what we got in my email this morning? Dear Matt and professors, as promised, here is a brand new list of Professor Imponderables for 2022 and beyond.
Oh, no.
Admittedly, they're getting tougher to come up with, so we hope you enjoy. Warmest greetings from Valencia, California, Frank Burrows and family.
Oh, boy.
Oh, this is a good one. I kind of like this one. And the whole list is fantastic, but we can only do one at a time. Professors, can you reveal your favorite childhood book?
No.
Yeah, it's kept under wraps.
Shouldn't have phrased it like that. Heather, what was your favorite childhood book?
You know, I think it was a lesser known Louisa May Alcott book.
Oh, that's nice.
Called, what was it called? 8 Cousins.
Okay.
Oh, I remember my sister reading that. Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Yeah. There was a time in America where when you were a young girl, you would get a set of Louisa May Alcott books. Ooh. It's interesting because I have the same set that Rosemary Weatherston, my colleague in the English department, she has the same exact set.
Aww.
We're about the same age, right? And so she's like, I got that set when I was, you know, a certain age. And so.
Like Boys Got the Hardy Boys, I think.
Yeah.
Or Encyclopedia Brown.
Right. Or Nancy Drew or something like
that. Yeah.
The Treasure Island was my favorite.
Treasure Island. Very
That's why you took up cruising, huh?
Yeah.
It started somewhere. I knew it had to.
I think it's also interesting what we're doing here is differing in your definitions of childhood, because my response was going to be, and it's still on my bookshelf, a very ratty copy from the early 70s of The Little Engine That Could, which I read repeatedly over and over again. Yeah.
Good night, Moon.
There you go.
I think probably A Wrinkle in Time.
Wrinkle in Time. Fantastic.
That popped into my head too. Yeah.
Yeah.
Very good, Mara.
I read a book when I was a kid called Follow My Leader.
Hmm.
It was about a little boy who plays with firecrackers, goes blind. And the leader is a guide dog. And it's about a 12 or 13 year old boy learning how to handle a guide dog and get along being blind. And I know it was one of my favorites because I remember it and because I saved it. And when my son was in first or second or kindergarten or first grade, he came home one day and said, we're going to read a book called Follow My Leader. And I went out and I dug out my copy and handed it to him to take it in and show it to his teacher.
Wow.
Well, that's great.
Nice.
Love those memories.
Most of the ones I read are now being banned across the area. School boards, you know, I don't know why they have a problem with third graders reading Tropic of Cancer, for example. I remember what's the Jack London?
All the Wild.
Call the Wild, I remember that. But I also read, and I don't know why, I think it was before they did the movies, the Ian Fleming Bond movies.
Sure. I mean,
Bond books.
Books,
I read a lot of those things. And I don't know why.
Oh, they were great.
Who would have given those to me, but I read most of them when I was a kid.
That's awesome. Dr. No.
Chitty Chitty Bang Bang.
Mm. Oh, there you go. Yeah, sure.
I think for me, this is going to sound embarrassing. Harold and the Purple Crayon.
Yeah.
Does anybody remember that one? Where the kid drew all over the wall and...
Makes perfect sense to me.
Created his own world.
That doesn't sound like anybody I know.
That's so strange.
Yeah, did it have an impact on you?
No, not at all. Not at all. No, actually, I used to draw on the wallpaper. Until my dad got wise and went to the Coca-Cola distributor and said, hey, can we get another chalkboard for the kid? You know, he's costing us a fortune in like wallpaper. That's all. So
nice. Nice. You know, professors, we have reached the end of our time together. So the time has come to say goodbye. Dave.
See ya.
Steven.
See ya.
Heather.
Bye-bye.
Mara.
Bye.
Jim.
Bye.
And last but not least, Hank.
So long until the next time I'm blessed.
Thanks.
You can email Ask the Professor at atp@udmercy.edu or visit the Ask the Professor Facebook page.
Ask the Professor is produced and directed by Michael Jason and Brian Masonville, and our executive producer is Professor Jason Roach. Until next week, I'm your host, Matt Mayo.